This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Man, now with Supersize Wildcard Weekend in the rearview mirror, it feels like my head is still spinning and there's so much to talk about. And I don't know how it happens, but these shows go faster and faster and faster. Every night when we're done, I think that had to be the fastest show that I've ever hosted in now 9+ years. Still, so much adrenaline, so much to talk about. There's never a dull moment when it comes to the NFL. And if you hadn't seen the numbers from Steelers Chiefs, now I picked this one because it was such a huge hit for the NFL, even though it was a blowout. And the Chiefs ultimately doubled up the Steelers 42-21. And people are using that as a reason why this expanded wild card format is a bad idea. That game on Sunday night, in the early ratings numbers, meaning they're probably going to add a few more based on digital and tape delay, though not many people tape delay sporting events, but still, you'll get a few more viewers that are tied into this. 23 million people. 23 million for that playoff game between Steelers and Chiefs, which would not have occurred if the playoffs were still operating under the old format, meaning only a dozen teams in. Now we're at 14, 7 from each conference. We wouldn't have had Bucks-Eagles, and we would not have seen Chiefs-Steelers on Sunday night, and yet that was among the most watched games of the entire year. Go back to last year's postseason. I mean, the playoff games, whether you think they're entertaining or whether they turn into blowouts and you believe they're yawners. And I kind of feel like the second half, well, after the third quarter of Bucks Eagles, I was good. I was ready for that game to be over. And so maybe that one doesn't get humongous ratings, but the primetime games, the high profile matchups with the top quarterbacks and with the iconic franchises, it doesn't matter really what the score is. And for that reason, the NFL is not dialing back. The NFL is not trimming or contracting its playoffs. Nope. In fact, you're more likely to see them add another team from each conference because, ka-ching, ad revenue, ticket sales, making money hand over fist. And honestly, as much as there were a handful of blowouts, I thought each story or each game had interesting storylines, Bucks and Eagles included. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. 6 games in da books, first time ever on a Monday. Rams and Cardinals, an NFC West rematch at SoFi Stadium. We get a taste of what the atmosphere could be like during the Super Bowl. Though remember, unless the Rams are there for the Super Bowl, you won't have that same hometown flair. But certainly we'll be packed with celebrities inside SoFi, which I'm pretty sure you can see from outer space with a satellite. It's that gaudy. And it is now the NFL's crown jewel, along with Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. This was a game in which right off the top, you could see that the Rams were not going to be pushed around on the line of scrimmage. That's been a problem for them. It was a problem against the Niners a couple of times. They struggle with teams like Tennessee, for instance, who can establish that line of scrimmage, who can be physical in the trenches. And at times they've been bullied. They've been pushed around, which doesn't really make sense to me because the Rams have got playmakers. They've got superstars on both sides of the ball. If you look at this roster on paper, it's star-studded. Matthew Stafford as their starting quarterback. Cooper Kupp, best receiver in the NFL, wins the Triple Crown. Odell Beckham Jr., who they bring in, not only can throw deep passes, but we know what he can do in space. And we know how fast he is and how good he is with the football. Regardless of what you may think of him, he's still a very talented receiver, and he's proving it in Los Angeles. Cam Akers is back for them. Sony Michel has been a great acquisition. Then you think about the defensive side of the ball. Aaron Donald, one of the best in the league. They add Von Miller. They've got Jalen Ramsey. Star power on both sides. And yet at times, they've been a little inconsistent and not played up to their potential. I know, we've heard that before. On Monday night, the Rams left absolutely no room for doubt. Odell Beckham Jr. gets his sixth touchdown catch, by the way. Anybody? Crickets? I won't go into it again, but I told you so. They start out with a couple of offensive touchdown drives that we see really them able to run the ball, which is critical for them. It's key. We talked to Steve Wyche about it last week. Why did the Rams kind of come out of that midseason swoon where they'd lost three games in a row and then win the NFC West? Bypass the Cardinals. Now, the Cardinals have their own issues. We'll talk about those coming up. But the Rams were able to do it by running the football. When they can establish the line of scrimmage and run the football, they take pressure off Matthew Stafford, and they're a much better team. And guess what? Stafford played turnover-free ball. Also very important. You don't need him wheeling-dealing like a gunslinging poor man's Brett Favre. That's not what you want from Matthew Stafford. You want him to have protection. You want him to be comfortable. You want him to be able to keep defenses honest. You don't want the guy trying to win games with every throw of the football. That's not what you want from Matthew Stafford. But they put enough pieces around him that this is essentially the perfect game tape. You want to know how the Rams can win, how they were able to dominate the Cardinals? This game tape shows you all of their potential. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. In the wake of Wild Card Weekend, there are still a lot that we can sift through in the rubble, if you will. Of course, we've got exit interviews going on this week. We've got teams already interviewing candidates for their personnel jobs, their coordinator positions, their head coaching of openings and availability. And so all of that's happening at the same time that we have gotten our field down to now 8 teams. The remaining 8 each have a pretty good shot at getting to the Super Bowl or winning the Super Bowl. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Do you need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can. The signature moment of this final wild card game takes place in the second quarter. And again, you see the Rams really flexing their muscles on defense.
Murray in shotgun. He's standing in the end zone. He's got 3 receivers right, 1 to his left. 3rd and 7 at the Cardinals 4, down 14-0 midway through the second quarter. Murray now is changing things up. The Rams seem to know what he's doing, so they elect to make some maneuvers. Shotgun snap. Murray from his end zone. Looking. Pumps. In trouble. Gets hit. Throws the ball forward, and it's picked off, and it's a touchdown. He underhand threw the ball. David Long picks it off, walks in for a touchdown. What a disaster. My goodness, you can't make that mistake if you're Kyler Murray.
We have never seen Kyler Murray do something like that.
On Cardinals radio, Murray is under pressure, under duress, and just heaves the ball underhanded, and it's an easy pick for David Long, who just catapults himself into the end zone from 3 yards out. And at that point, the pick six makes this 21-0. If you did not see the reaction of Peyton and Eli, and actually Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, was on with them at the time, it's hysterical. Just go back and watch that reaction. Eli lets out a sound that goes something like this. Yay! And Peyton turned gray because, you know, he wears all of these quarterback decisions that he watches on TV week in and week out. So it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence and with the Mannings. I was all about the Monday Night Mannings, except they're so distracting. Yeah, we didn't get any chicken parm, but that would be great right now, actually. That sounds like a good breakfast. Okay, I know that's weird, but I'm feeling breakfast now. My stomach is growling. So the Mannings were fun. The Rock was hysterical. Larry Fitzgerald was part of the broadcast, too. But, however, my favorite moment had to be when Peyton Manning had a hot mic and didn't realize it and swore on live TV. I can't hear bleep, he said. Just as Eli goes to him to ask him to break down a play.
I'm going to drink a lot of Budweiser tonight, Tracy.
That's what you hear from Peyton when Eli tosses to him. I can't hear bleep and doesn't realize he's on a hot mic. And so Eli quickly reverts to back to Larry Fitzgerald and says, never mind, Peyton's got something else going on. It was so good. Those two are clowns. And I mean that with all of the affection I can possibly muster. They are clowns. I will miss the Monday Night Mannings until next year.
I love that they brought it back for the playoffs, though.
Yes, that was fantastic. So it was a lot of fun. And in the fourth quarter, it was just the two of them in no doubt filling time. I had to turn it off. At halftime, I have to get away from them because I really need to pay attention, focus on the game moving forward. And it only went from bad to worse. So following that pick six, the three-touchdown deficit, the Rams kept the pressure on.
Murray under center. Connor, the single back. Play action. Murray tries to dump it to Connor. It's deflected and intercepted. Picked by Marquise Copeland. And the big man with the deflected pick at the 49 of the Rams. From the 49-yard line on first down. Rams with a single back, Stafford under center from the 49, tosses to OBJ, he's going to throw, floating out to the right side, Akers is there, he's got it at the 25, Akers inside the 20, and down at the 12-yard line. Jordan Hicks able to catch up with him, but Odell Beckham Jr. airing it out for 41, and a Rams first down. Second down from the 7, 6 yards for a first, Stafford throws right side, Cup with a fingertip grab, plucking it off the turf at the 1 and tumbling in for a Rams touchdown. Second touchdown pass of the night for Matthew Stafford, and 27-0. The Rams in complete control at home.
Kevin Kugler on Westwood One. Ultimately, the Rams would dominate this game. And while they did see the Cardinals get into the end zone, so they didn't pitch a shutout, the numbers for Arizona, brutal. The first half numbers alone tell the entire story, but I'll spread them out a little bit and just kind of give you the contrast between the two. So the Rams end up with 375 total yards. Matthew Stafford, a very efficient game. He was over 200 yards. He didn't have to do a whole lot. The Rams were 3 for 4 in the red zone. And Odell Beckham Jr. is throwing passes 40 yards downfield. They're able to establish the run with Cam Akers and Sony Michel. They get a couple of sacks, including Von Miller, who has his first playoff sack since Super Bowl 50. This was a total team effort, which means nobody had to be a superstar, and yet everybody pitched in. It was the first playoff win for Matthew Stafford, though honestly, everybody else around him was more excited than he was, at least externally. But we'll let you hear from both quarterbacks and the coaches coming up, some of the others who played major roles. For the Cardinals, 0 for 9 on third down. Now, I'm not sure what's worse. In an entire game, they don't convert a third down, or in an entire game, they only have 9 chances at third down. That's pretty rough. 0 for 9 on third down, not even 200 total yards, although the second half was a lot better than the first. In the first half, 40 40 total yards. That's pretty difficult for a playoff team in the NFL to do. You actually have to work hard to only accumulate 40 yards and a half in the NFL. They had more drives than the Rams, which I think is fascinating. Sometimes the numbers are, they can get kind of twisted around. Lost the turnover battle, of course, with two interceptions. And got blown away in the time of possession battle. Everything the Rams wanted to do, it started at the line of scrimmage, and they worked their way out from there. A near masterpiece, if you will, on both sides of the ball. So, of course, Sean McVay was bouncing up and down.
I think it was the early down efficiency. I thought our guys got great removal up front. I thought our backs saw the lanes the right way. I thought Matthew, when we did throw the football, made great decisions, threw the ball accurately, got a lot of different guys involved. And, you know, that's exactly what we want to be able to do. And that's where you can be tough to defend. Came out just with a great look in our eye. I thought the coaches put together a good game plan, but ultimately the players executed. And there was a lot of guys that contributed, and the defense was phenomenal.
Well, it was fun. It's huge when you got the fans behind you making a lot of noise. To kind of get you amped up, you kind of, you know, start getting the fans into the game a little bit. So it definitely was a great environment today with the fans. They did an awesome job as far as, you know, making it loud for them and picking us up when we needed it.
They have no draft picks until 2035, but they've got a team that is ready to win now. And they are now set up for a rematch with the Buccaneers. But when I say rematch, it goes back to September. They beat the Rams in Los Angeles. Sorry, they beat the Bucs in Los Angeles. The Rams won that game. My fault. So many words. Now they have to go to Tampa to take on the Super Bowl champions. Neither team is in the same place. We actually talked with our friend Michael Duarte from NBC LA, who was on the field at SoFi on Monday night and then joined us earlier on the show. Good insight from him if you want to know about the Rams and SoFi and also about the post-game reaction. But he said what he remembers about the first battle between Bucs and Rams, DeSean Jackson had this humongous game. Do you know where DeSean Jackson is now? Well, he was with the Raiders. He caught a fourth down catch, if I remember correctly, for 30 yards potentially. I think maybe it was against the Bengals. Things have changed. The Bucs have lost pieces. The Bucs don't even know who their running backs will be coming up in divisional weekend. The Rams are playing some of their best football of the year. Can they establish the run against the Buccaneers, who have a very good run defense? Can they get to Tom Brady? There could be changes on the Bucs offensive line. So there are a lot of question marks about that game moving forward. But of course, over the course of a season, you play in September, neither roster or neither team looks the same when you get to January. It was the first playoff win for Matthew Stafford. He wasn't bouncing up and down like Sean McVay.
I think it means a lot more to you guys and all that. I mean, I just want to be a part of this team and help us win. So I trust in myself, trust in my abilities, trust in my teammates. And I'll go out there and play and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I think he did a great job leading the way. You know, he's still the same great player to me, and he always was before this game as well. And so I think it's good so you guys don't have to talk about that anymore. So he can get that one out of the way. But really proud of him. Just so lucky to be able to do this with him. He's our leader. We wouldn't be here without him.
So Matthew Stafford goes cliche after his first experience moving on in the playoffs. So he had three playoff starts before this, all with the Lions. And of course, they didn't advance in any of them. He goes cliche. Let the chips fall where they may. Stop it. Come on, man. It's your first time ever tasting victory in the postseason. It's sweeter than let the chips fall where they may. Von Miller, he's not jaded, even though he's a Super Bowl champion and a Super Bowl MVP. First playoff sack since Super Bowl 50, also had six tackles with the Rams on Monday night.
You know, I'm from Texas, you know, and I had to, you know, take advantage of this opportunity being back in the playoffs, man. I took 5 years off without making it, and I'm definitely appreciative of being here with this franchise, and I'm definitely appreciative of being in the playoffs as well.
This is, again, a team that has gone all out to acquire stars on both sides. I'm not telling you the window closes after this run, but these guys, they've been brought together for the express purpose of winning a Super Bowl in Los Angeles. I think their window probably still stays open next year. Rosters always change. But it's a win now mentality. That's why you go get all of these veteran guys, guys who are so skilled and so athletic, and you put them on the same roster and you say, let's do this thing. The time is now. And of course, they all want to participate. Why? Because they love to win and they want to win a Super Bowl too. 855-212-4227. Now, we got a couple of polls up on our social media. One of them is pretty standard. We do the After Hours TD of the week. So you can vote on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or my Twitter, A Law Radio, and then also on our Facebook page. That one's easy, self-explanatory. The other poll from earlier in the show, and we've been taking a lot of your calls and getting a lot of feedback, it's a little cheaper in terms of its thrill quotient. It's cheap thrills. Who do you blame? This is sports radio cheap thrills at its finest. Who do you blame for the Dallas Cowboys' early exit from the playoffs? And we've got three names and then the blanket answer of other, which is what I went through, because I don't think you can blame one person ever for the demise or the underachieving of an entire team. But it is fascinating to get the reaction on both Twitter and Facebook. So check it out. Vote while you're there, and we'll get back to the reaction from Monday night. So what happened to Kyler Murray and how much does experience have to do with it? And also J.J. Watt returning to play in this game and did have a few tackles, but not the way he wanted it to go. It's After Hours on a Tuesday morning now. Wild Card Weekend is in the rearview mirror, peeps. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Murray with time. Pops, pressures, collapsing, flips it out into the open field. It's intercepted. David Long Jr. scoops it up and takes it in for a pick six and a 20-0 Rams lead.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
Kevin Kuzler with the national call on Westwood One. That pick six for David Long. It was served up on a silver platter by Kyler Murray, the first of two interceptions on what were back-to-back drives by the Cardinals. And it all went horribly wrong at that point. The wheels just came off. And the Rams were up at this point. They were playing their game, exactly the type of game that they wanted to play. But the Cardinals played right into their hands with those turnovers in the second quarter. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. What makes AutoZone America's number one battery destination? Because they offer free battery testing and charging and reliable replacement batteries. And they've always got your battery solution. Get in the zone, AutoZone. You can find us on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We're asking you to place blame for the Cowboys' early demise in the postseason. I know, it's cheap radio thrills. And then also vote for TD of the week. Right now, we've got a three-way race. Sorry, David Long. Right now, your pick six is a distant caboose. So on Twitter or on our Facebook page, and of course, we'll reveal coming up on our next show, which is The Hump Show. Quick show note, Matt the Musher will join us from Alaska on our Hump Show, so we haven't had an update from him in quite a while. He's been training. He's been part of a couple of actual races in preparation for the Iditarod, which is coming up very quickly. So Matt the Musher from Alaska will join us on the Hump Show coming up tomorrow night here on CBS Sports Radio. This was not how Kyler Murray wanted to begin his playoff career or end his 2021 season.
prepare all week, all season, you know, to be where we are. And then, you know, the game wasn't competitive at all. So, it's, you know, it's disappointing that we didn't, you know, didn't make it a game, you know, and come out and play the football we know we're capable of playing. That's really the most disappointing part. You know, losing is one thing, but when you don't, you know, you don't even make it competitive, it's another thing. So, yeah, it's disappointing.
You come out against a really good team and don't do anything right for the first two quarters, that's what's going to happen. I got to give them credit. They played a great game, and we didn't do much right coaching or playing the first half. Got to use this as motivation and come back stronger from it, because that's not indicative of who we want to be. And unfortunately, that showed up tonight.
The Cardinals were making their first playoff appearance since 2015. So a lot of these guys, not all of them, of course, they've got some veteran free agents as well, but a lot of these guys were in the playoffs for the first time. That includes Kyler Murray. It includes Cliff Kingsbury. And so I do believe that there's always something to that. If you're not a team that has a pre-built-in culture of winning. So for instance, trying to think of a great example of this. The Buffalo Bills had to start from scratch, right, with Sean McDermott. They hadn't made the playoffs in so long, even after they made the playoffs. Was it against the Texans, that initial game when they finally made the postseason? And it was, gosh, it was a brutal game. It was like 6-3 or something like that. Anyway, a few years ago, their first playoff experience didn't go the way they wanted, right? It was just about getting there and ending that drought. I would say the same thing about the Cleveland Browns. Now, I know this season was an encore that they'd like to forget, but they get to the postseason. They win a game for the first time in a long time. Great. It's a stepping stone. Philadelphia Eagles, they're not completely rebuilding the culture, but they've got a brand new head coach and a younger quarterback. So when you're building a culture, which is what the Cardinals have been doing over the last several years, to make the playoffs is a big deal. I know they didn't want to go out like this, but honestly, I do think that when you're starting over, essentially at the key positions on the field, that it matters that maybe you haven't logged a lot of playoff games, that you haven't logged a lot of experience on this pressure-packed stage.
I think experience is a big part of it. You know, there's only one way to experience playoff football, and that's to go through it. And unfortunately, we didn't, you know, play our best game. And I thought LA played a great game, had a great plan, and outplayed us and outcoached us. But I think you just got to go through these moments and learn from it and grow from it and use it as motivation.
Now, I want to read you something from J.J. Watt. And he you can hear it in his voice. We do have another cut from him, which we can use. But he called this season a massive failure. Massive is the word that he used. I don't think that's in the cut that we have. Okay, but well, let's play this cut, though, from JJ, because he returned. He was activated beforehand. He hadn't played since week 7. He worked his arse off to get back to the point where he could be active. But in his voice, you can hear it afterwards, how dejected he is.
They played much, much better than we did. There's not a whole lot to say about it. They made more plays, they made less mistakes, and they executed extremely well, and we executed extremely poorly. They played very, very well, and we played very, very poorly.
So it's not that particular cut in which he says it's a massive failure, but it's a direct quote from JJ. Maybe we'll find it for a show later in the week. It was a massive failure from what we were capable of doing to what we showed we can do to today. There is no other way to describe it. So that comes from JJ, a veteran who's been on teams that have won division titles and have gone to the playoffs, of course, with the Texans, though he's not yet played in a conference championship. So after hearing JJ call this season a massive failure, and remember, the Cardinals started out 7-0, and they were on top of the NFC West for a good portion of the season. James tells me in my ear he has the J.J. Watt soundbite, so here we go with J.J.
It was a massive failure. I mean, from what we were capable of doing and from what we showed we can do to today, there's no other way to describe it than as a failure.
It was a massive failure from JJ's mouth. So thank you, producer James, for finding that cut so quickly. The question was then posed to Kyler Murray. Is this a massive failure after losing to the Rams in your first playoff game?
I play to win the Super Bowl. That's the goal. That's the mission. It's to win the Super Bowl, not to, you know, make it to the playoffs or go to the second round. You know, the goal is to win the Super Bowl. We fell short of that. So, yes, I agree.
Strong words. Now, you want your leaders to have high expectations. You want your leaders to believe that you can accomplish the goals that you set out to accomplish. Every team's goal is to win the Super Bowl, obviously, or you're not in it. I don't know if I thought this Cardinals team was capable of winning the Super Bowl. They were a very popular preseason pick to make some noise this year, and they did. They started out 7-0. They were the last team that was undefeated. They had a chance to win the NFC West even as late as week 18. But they lost some pieces, like every team did. Kyler Murray was out for several games. They lost DeAndre Hopkins. J.J. Watt was out for a while. James Conner was on and off the field after starting out like a house on fire. He's a great revelation in 21, a resurgent year for him. But I still say there's something to building. It wasn't that long ago that they were one of the worst teams in the NFL. And they get Kyler Murray, and they bring in Cliff Kingsbury, and they fill up their roster with some veterans as well. They bring in pieces from elsewhere. They've changed the culture, so the expectations are actually there, and they can call this a massive failure. I don't think I agree with them. Externally, I don't think this is a massive failure. It's disappointing, sure. But I'm glad that they've got guys in their locker room who think that they're better than this, and they should be better than this. On Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Now, we've got four games coming up divisional weekend. Wow. I'm not even sure how I'm going to be able to pick my favorite, but the great thing is I don't have to. It's straight ahead. The finish to the Niners-Cowboys is still the most scintillating controversy from Wildcard Weekend. What did Commissioner Roger Goodell have to say about that final play and how the officials handled it? Jimmy Garoppolo has a shoulder strain. He was answering questions about this victory in Dallas. And we're just all about football now. I'm so stuck in football mode, but I like it here.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Prescott takes the shotgun snap. He's going to run around left guard. Prescott slides inside the 25, but there's 8 seconds left and counting. They scurry up to the line of scrimmage, down to two, down to one. It's down to zeros. What will they say here? San Francisco onto the field with the coaching staff and the sideline players. They think it's over. And everyone looking in the direction of referee Alex Kemp.
Well, the umpire had a hard time getting that spotted because there's bodies going everywhere and he got knocked around a little bit.
That's the end of the game.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
The debate's still raging. Did the official steal the game from the Dallas Cowboys? Please make me roll my eyes. Actually, a guy called me earlier and blamed the referees, said they could have put time on the clock because they were the reason why the Cowboys lost that game. And I just laughed. All I could do is laugh. Sometimes that's all you can do, really. But we are asking you who is to blame for the Cowboys' early exit from the playoffs. You may not think that they were expected to do anything beyond just win their division, but I think this talented roster certainly had potential, and we did not see it manifest. So we're asking you, in the wake of this abrupt and jarring final play between the Niners and the Cowboys, who is to blame for what happened? Not just on Sunday, but the fact that they did not capitalize on their opportunities, which is a playoff game at home against a lower seed. I don't believe much in upsets. I think in the NFL, upsets have to do with betting lines. And I'll just be honest, 1.1% of the time do I actually know which team is favored. I couldn't care less. in the NFL, we should know better, right? We should know better. But I do think there's plenty of blame to go all around for the Cowboys, and we're hearing it from all sides. So we've got a poll up on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and we've also got a post on Facebook, and we've been bombarded by your reaction. Everything from the refs to Mike McCarthy to Kellen Moore to Dak Prescott to Jerry Jones, which I dispute royally. Jerry put together a roster as the general manager and the personnel department. He and his people put together a roster that's capable of winning. Why didn't they? Now, what did Roger Goodell have to say about the way the officials handled the end of Cowboys Niners? And just to refresh, Dak Prescott runs up the middle 17 yards. By the time he pops back up after his slide, there are 8 seconds. So it's on Dak because there was not enough time left at that point. He should have dropped. Everybody I've talked to inside the NFL has indicated that was not a bad play. It was a good play because the Niners defense essentially had spread out wide to guard the sidelines. He shouldn't have gone that far. I've talked to multiple quarterbacks who've said he should not have run that far. Regardless, by the time he pops up, there are 8 seconds to go. He hustles back to the line. A couple of guys took their sweet old time, but he gets the guys in formation. He hands the ball to the center. The official has to touch it. The umpire is coming up from behind. He's 30 yards behind the play. Don't ask me why, but he takes extra time to get up there. He's not as fast as Dak Prescott. He has to try to fight his way through the offensive linemen and their large butts. And he trips. He touches the ball. He moves it backwards. By the time Dak spiked it, the clock had run out. Really not much left to do except for Alex Camp to say the game is over or this is the end of the game. Roger Goodell sat down with Steve Wyche, who was our guest last week here on CBS Sports Radio. This was in the headquarters there of NFL Network and SoFi Stadium, and he asked the commissioner about how the officials handled the end of the game.
That's exactly how our officials are taught. That's the mechanic that they use, and officiating is all about mechanics and consistency there. And you know, I spoke to our officiating department because I was there at the game. And they feel that that was handled exactly the way we teach it.
I wonder if the commissioner got an earful from his buddy, Jerry Jones. But again, if you know football, I don't know how you can blame the officials for that. Could the umpire have been running quicker? Could he have been closer to the end of the play? Maybe, but Dak Prescott's a world-class athlete. The umpire is not. So he's not going to run as fast as Dak Prescott. Could he have kept up a little more? Maybe. I'd have to go back and watch the play kind of with the sky view, but it's not on the official. These are rules and protocols that every quarterback knows. And to this point, I've not heard one former NFL player blame the officials in this case. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. The Niners, of course, win that game and go on to Green Bay for this weekend's divisional round. And they've won 8 of their last 10, though we find out that in the second quarter of their game against Dallas, Jimmy Garoppolo suffers a minor shoulder sprain to his throwing shoulder. The word that was used is slightly sprained shoulder. According to Kyle Shanahan, he should be okay for the Green Bay game. But this is always how you hold your breath against Jimmy Garoppolo, right? The fact that the Niners were able to run the ball was huge. They've got to be able to get Elijah Mitchell going early. And boy, has he been a revelation. What a great addition to their team. When they can control the line of scrimmage and they can find holes for their running backs, it's the best formula. Then you don't have to ask Jimmy Garoppolo to do too much. Can he make most throws on the field? Yes. You don't want him forcing the issue. And maybe later in the game, that's what happened. Because you remember, the reason the Cowboys got back into it is Jimmy Garoppolo airmailing a ball over the head of a receiver that gets intercepted by Anthony Brown. And he also missed a wide open Brandon Ayuk. These happened in the third and fourth quarter to give Dallas life.
The interception just, I mean, got away from me. Shot it high. But and then to B.A., yeah, just another tough one. Those are the ones you just got hit. Those are the easy layup ones you just got to make.
The easy layup ones. No doubt those are throws that every quarterback makes a million times a day in practice, right? And yet they can't be perfect on every throw. But those were two that he sailed over the top of his intended target, and they just happened to come at very critical positions. Though he says that he believed the whole time that the Niners would walk away winners.
I mean, it was just an emotional game. The highs and lows of it, everything. Just never felt like it was getting away from us. I always felt like we were in control of the game, but just, it made for some good TV, I guess.
Oh, yeah, definitely did that. Thank you, Jimmy Garoppolo. And what about the defense? What about the way that the Niners' D was able to hold that Cowboys offense at bay? Only 7 points until middle of the fourth quarter.
Incredible. I mean, I didn't see all of it, but just the injuries, guys going down, other people stepping up. It was a full team effort today. Those guys really did their part, really just that's why I felt like we were so in control of the game. You know, they were, you know, that's a good offense that they were going against, and they kept them in check the whole game. It was really impressive.
It definitely was that, and I even have gone back and forth with a few Cowboys fans on our Facebook page who said it wasn't that impressive, that it was more about the Cowboys and what they did wrong. And I will agree that they shot themselves in the foot with all of the penalties, the pre-snap penalties, the holding calls. And as much as you want to blame the coach for that, come on, Randy Gregory knows the rules. These guys know the rules. I think you can hold the coaches responsible if you feel like your team is unprepared. But in terms of being focused and motivated for a playoff game at home in front of a massive crowd like that, these guys are professionals, and that is on them. So I don't believe that all of it falls on the coaches when you have a game like that where there's 14 penalty flags. But keep in mind, big picture, the Cowboys are one of the most penalized teams in the NFL, which does fall on the culture and on the overall discipline, because I think you have to crack down on that. And if guys are drawing too many penalty flags, then there needs to be some, I don't want to say punishment, but there needs to be some type of ramification for that. Maybe you have to sit a couple of plays, whatever it is. But the Cowboys, maybe you didn't think they could go to the Super Bowl, but I certainly do believe that they wasted opportunities this season. And you look at the majority of the wins they had, they were against teams with losing records who did not make the playoffs. But it doesn't mean that they didn't have a talented roster and they underachieved, because I still believe that is the case. So we have a lot more that we'll get to as we inch our way forward toward what is this divisional weekend coming up. Cincinnati at Tennessee, San Francisco at Green Bay, that's Saturday, followed by the Rams at the Bucks, and then the Bills at the Chiefs on Sunday. Before we hit the top, I just want to say how sorry I am to hear about the passing of longtime Chicago sports icon and radio host Les Grobstein. And I know we've had Chicago with us, I don't think tonight, but over the course of the last week, we had a few shows where Chicago was tuned in on our affiliate AM 670 The Score, and I didn't know what was happening, only that Les was out. Come to find out, he passed away suddenly on Sunday. And I know Mitch Rosen, who's our program director there in Chicago, and all of the other hosts and producers who worked with Les are in shock. And it's an amazing legacy. 50 years working in our industry, in sports broadcasting, in sports reporting, in sports radio, 50 years is phenomenal. But 50 years in one city is nearly unheard of. He was a Chicago staple. He was certainly a Chicago legend and just a voice that kept so many fans company for so many years. So my condolences to his family and his friends. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.